Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hey, Zia. Kevin.
Hi there.
Can you hear me okay?
I sure can.
Oh, fantastic. Great to see you. So,
good to be seen.
can you just tell the viewers who are not familiar with you a little bit about your work, please?
No, I can't tell a little bit about it. It's too long. But although...
we've got an hour.
25 years. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, why not? 25 years ago this February, we held a big meeting in downtown Vancouver, and there were 600 people, or most of them Indigenous, and they had all gone through these death camps they call residential schools. It really kicked off our whole movement that not only exposed genocide in Canada, but really escalated all over the world, and even forced Pope Benedict out of office in 2011. 2012, that in that period. So I thought it was too bad the guy died off before the 10th anniversary of that. You know, we were planning some nice celebrations. But anyway, it's all about first the campaign to expose the murder of children, and that's grown all over the world now. We work with people in many countries fighting this genocide that's now affecting everybody with the COVID police state and all that. So, you know, murderbydecree.com tells a lot of the story. I've written 22 books. I mean, you know, what can I say? <It's>
like... So what is the significance of Pope Benedict's death?
Well, I mean, in one sense, it's not significant at all. Yet another child killer has died in bed. But in terms of the whole politics of the Vatican, Bergoglio and Ratzinger represented the two factions, basically. Ratzinger was the old traditionalists within the Vatican, like a lot of the Italian cardinals and that were behind him. Bergoglio, Pope Francis, so-called, is the New World Order Pope. He's the one who's been orienting a lot of the money and attention to China. As a matter of fact, you might remember that in July, Bergoglio came over to Canada to do another one of these farcical apologies for mass murder. And he disappeared for a few days when he was there. Well, it turns out he was in Prince Rupert on the West Coast, signing an agreement with the Chinese to underwrite their takeover of the North American economy to over $1 trillion every year. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that the next pope could very well be a Chinese fellow, one of the Chinese cardinals like John Tong, because it's part of the realignment geopolitically east. And it's one of the reasons Joe Biden went over there and fawned over the pope a few months ago. It's the Western powers are very concerned about this. And so, you know, it's really the death of Ratzinger means really the death of the old traditional wing. It's now full speed ahead to, integrating the Vatican more and more with China. It's the only country in the world where the government gets to appoint the bishops. It was a deal that worked out. And, it's part of that. But, you know, living in Canada over the years, it's nothing surprising when you know anything about the history of this church and state collusion behind genocide.
Why would the Catholic Pope ally with atheist communist China?
Well, don't forget, religion and politics, that's just window dressing for the masses. It's all about power. And when you look at their systems of power, kind of the Confucian Maoist and the Vatican hierarchy, it's really the very same idea. You've got an emperor, godlike figure on top, and everybody else, you know, follows that tyrannical system. It was interesting when, no accident that the Vatican was the first power to recognize Hitler diplomatically, because continual popes have been saying all the time, that fascist system of government is really the Catholic social doctrine made the law. You know, they believe in that kind of hierarchical system of thought and government and everything. So they're natural bed partners. Plus, it's all about big money. You know, it's always about the money. And the Vatican, according to a lot of people have done research on where the world's money goes, about 80% of all the deposits in the world end up in either the Vatican Bank or the Bank of International Settlements in Geneva. These are like offshore banks that nobody can access. Like the Vatican Bank, you can't monitor it. You don't know who runs it. It's a secret society like the Catholic Church. And so a lot of that money now is heading to the rising power in the world, China. So, you know, I mean, it's nothing new if you know anything about Vatican history and politics, right?
What do we know about the character of Pope Francis?
As a person?
Yeah.
He's, like I often say to people, nobody operates at any level of the Catholic Church without being part of the crime because of a standing policy known as crimen solicitanus. It's been around for a century. It says that when children are raped or harmed, everybody is silenced. You don't tell the police or you get excommunicated. Now, that's a criminal conspiracy. It says to every child rapist in the world, you can become a Catholic priest and you'll get away with it. And so with that criminal conspiracy in place, it's no accident that someone like Jorge Bergoglio goes from being a priest to the head of the Jesuits in Argentina in 14 years. And he did that by being very close to the military junta there during the dirty wars in the 70s and 80s, where the military junta killed over 30,000 people. And Bergoglio was the front man. I mean, there's an infamous picture of him arm in arm with General Videla walking down. He was turning a blind eye to the torture and killing of his own priests and nuns, being thrown out of helicopters into the Atlantic, you know, like what the military junta did. And he turned a blind eye and he went around the world doing what he does now for the Catholic Church, which is make them look good. And it's interesting, the present queen of the Netherlands, her name is Maxima Zuriegueta. She's Argentine too. And according to Alice Sturr, who's a Dutch independent journalist, she discovered that Queen Maxima has been paying the present Pope Bergoglio 15,000 euros a month for the last 8 years. You know, is bribe money, hush money? What is this? We know her dad was in the military junta with Bergoglio. We know the children were being trafficked and disappeared out of the cathedral when he was archbishop there. It's like in Spain under Franco, they had a system where they would traffic children and political prisoners. If you're thrown in jail, they would take your children, put them into loyal fascist or Catholic homes and raise them. I've met with some of these people in Barcelona a few years ago. They don't know who their families are because the Catholic Church made billions of dollars child trafficking. And Bergoglio was in the heart of this stuff. And he also has a very sordid relationship, like every pope and cardinal for a long time, with this thing called the Ninth Circle, which is a child sacrificial cult we've talked about before. Eyewitnesses have been at these ceremonies. It's the Jesuits invented it back in the 1600s as a way to control, you know, heads of state. You get them, like we see in the native world all the time. You go after somebody's children and you can control them. So you don't live long as a pope unless you're part of these rituals. And we saw that in the guy who lasted 30 days in office in 1978, John Paul I. He made the mistake of maybe taking the Bible too seriously, you know. He started an investigation into the Vatican Bank. He was dead in 29 days. You know, everyone who was connected to him was dead within a year. All the magistrates investigating it got their cars blown up. So, I mean, it's the old sordid Vatican politics. And Bergoglio has survived by being just as blood-soaked as Ratzinger was. So, I mean, the point is, though, that it's never about the morality of something. There's no place for morality or human rights in that system. It's all about power and where it, you know, who it rests with, right?
So is the pedophile faction in complete control of the Catholic Church?
Well, the Catholic Church is, by nature. It's like saying we're the good Nazis. Well, I mean, you know, you can't be in the hierarchy without supporting that policy of institutionalized destruction of children. And, you know, it's right implicit in the mindset, you know, God sacrificed his firstborn, his only child, for the good of all of us. The attitude in the Catholic Mass or the Ninth Circle is that the blood of the innocent will redeem you. And that's exactly what happens in from Toast Nienhaus and other eyewitnesses who were raised in this intergenerational cult, the Ninth Circle. They say that's what happens. They take children and they torture them horribly, rape them, and then not only kill them, drink their blood and cannibalize them. And if you don't take part in that, you're killed instantly. I mean, and she saw this happening in Carnarvon Castle, where Prince Philip, Prince Charles, now King Charles, was coronated. There's a link between him and the disappearance of children in Canada as well, which I can get into. But it, you know, at that level, it operates with impunity. And the old dilemma was, it's not so much people don't know what's going on; it's who wants to go up against these people, right?
So, as judicial systems around the world have taken crimes against kids more seriously, how has the Catholic Church adopted its legal strategies to circumvent this?
Oh, well, I mean, they really, in a way, don't have to worry about legal thing. Because, I mean, again, the law is just, it's like the notion of human rights or international law. It's a nice idea, but it's never enforced. I know this when I was a United Church minister and I got tossed out and they were able to destroy my family, take my kids from me, blacklist me, do everything totally legally, even though everything I was talking about in the residential schools were subsequently proven. They're even admitted it now. Even Bergoglio, when he was in Canada in the summer, said, yes, it was genocide. Almost in a mocking way, like, yeah, we did it. What are you going to do about it? We're not accountable, right? It's a way people in power psychologically control people. They kill and get away with it to say, look what we can do. And, people are outraged simply because they don't know the nature of what you're dealing with. So once you know, then you realize, well, you've got to fight this on a higher level, on a different level. And I'll give you an example of how we've done that. When we started occupying churches on Sunday morning, within 2 weeks, the government in Canada buckled and started talking about a truth commission into the residential schools. They started talking apologies. They were, it's like Sun Tzu says in The Art of War, you hit the enemy when they're weak. And the Catholic Church is the major partner of China in this whole global corporatocracy being set up. You hit the Catholic churches where they're vulnerable on Sunday morning on the collection plate. And we find time and again that it sends reverberations everywhere. So, I mean, people have got to think in those terms and not, mere protest or just sharing information, but these are children's lives constantly at stake, and children dying routinely. So, I mean, if that doesn't activate people, I don't know what will, right?
So, 100 years ago, you didn't see like these headlines, pedophile priests arrested like you see now. Are you saying that the ones that are arrested now are just sacrificial lambs?
Right. I mean, it's funny because all they're doing is enforcing Vatican policy when they hide child rape. But occasionally you need to throw one of them to the crowd to make it seem like, we're being accountable. More camouflage to make them black seem white, or even white seem black. It's, just basic public relations gestures. But what's interesting is when they do that, then people are willing to talk. And we find that a lot of our sources, people have provided us inside information, are people who are disenchanted, who are victimized, like me, ex-clergy, who were driven out for having the audacity to say, what's our dirty laundry behind that door? What are all these children who have gone missing? So they shoot themselves in the foot all the time because, they're a big institution. And the bigger you get, the more unwieldy and inflexible and unstable you become. And that's an advantage when you take on these big institutions, right?
But these headlines, though, about the pedophile priests, even though they're sacrificial lambs, isn't it causing a drop-off in church attendees?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was in, last time I was in Dublin, a woman, a friend of mine, Mary Kelly, she's a great old woman. She walked She and I entered Pro Cathedral on a Sunday morning. Now, this is Dublin. This is supposed to be the heart of Catholic country, right? Seats 500 people. We counted 32 in church on a mass. Wow. And Mary then went up and seized the pulpit and started talking to people about the policies of church. And when the priest came up, she decked him, just knocked him out. like, because, you know, she'd been raped as a child, not only raped, but see, they were used in drug testing experiments. They would take kids from Catholic orphanages and that, like they did to Native people in Canada. And Pfizer and all these other drug companies that are pushing the shot now on everybody, they were using children routinely as drug testing guinea pigs, and they would die. There's a big mass grave in Chum, Ireland, in Galway, where they found 800 skeletons of babies, a lot of them missing their skulls. Classic, you know, satanic cult ritual evidence, right? But guess who did the investigation? The Catholic Church and the government step in and like in Canada, do a whitewash. Hey, well, I guess we'll investigate ourselves. Nope, didn't find anything. You know,
like, you got a question from one of the viewers here, and if any of the other viewers have got a question, just put it in the chat and we'll pull them out. So Ray J has asked, has there been any improvement in the Canadian situation now that the mainstream have been talking about it?
Improvement, yeah, in the sense that people on the ground are more willing to talk about things. They feel safer. It's like for many years, we were in our movement, we were the only ones talking about mass graves and genocide. Now everybody's doing it. So yeah, it co-opts the issue in one sense. But a lot of the eyewitnesses who are still alive are more free to talk. And then we say, okay, look, here's part of the story you didn't know about. But there's this huge wall of resistance. Every time we try to get, you know, our book, like with all the evidence of genocide, we try to get that in the school curriculum routinely, and it's constantly blocked. The teachers want it. They want to teach the real history. But the school board, the government steps in, you know, they get calls from the church lawyers threatening lawsuits. You know, so I mean, it's a way to shut the whole thing down. So it's a continual David and Goliath battle, swimming against the stream on this stuff, because it's still going on. You know, there all these Native families that go missing all through British Columbia and Alberta, because China, if you you know, you've probably heard of the Highway of Tears, Sean, where a lot of the Native women go missing in northern British Columbia. You trace that highway where all the disappearances happen, and it's right where the liquid natural gas sites are, because China's switching from coal to liquid natural gas, and they send in people and just wipe out all the local Natives. You know, the British used to do it. Now the Chinese are doing it, right? So, I mean, it's part of that whole ongoing genocide that means that you can't know about the history, because then you know what's going on now. So you got to put out a fake narrative all the time. Yeah, there were a few children harmed, but now we've apologized and we all want to heal and reconcile and make better. All this drug they keep pumping into people. And on the ground, you see the opposite all the time. So, I mean, it's just a matter of seeing what is and not what you're being fed all the time, right?
Just to add to that then, because that might sound a bit much for some people. I was speaking to someone that I knew from childhood who ended up working for a big oil company. And he said they just went around the world and the oil company, you know, if they find an area that they want, they just wipe out the locals, take right. it over just like that. So it's this stuff is going on, isn't it, worldwide?
Well, I can give you a recent example of that, Sean. If people go to murderbydecree.com, go to ITCCS updates, and if you look over the fall months, you'll see a report. It happened last September in Saskatchewan. A big company called Rio Tinto. It's a big mining company. And as a matter of fact, the Queen of England had major investments in it. Her personal wealth increased 15-fold while she was on the throne because of her investments in depleted uranium, Rio Tinto. So Rio Tinto discovers diamonds beneath the area near where I grew up. It's in eastern Saskatchewan on the prairies. And it's called the James Smith Cree Reservation. These are Cree people. And the local chief said, no, we're not going to allow strip mining in this area. What happens 2 weeks later is Chief Wally Burns of the Cree Nation, who's opposing this, in the middle of the night, 6 of his 10 relatives are murdered. And 4 other people. And the Mounties show up and conveniently find their Lee Harvey Oswald scapegoat, this guy called, I'll remember, Miles Dempsey. He was a wandering kid. They claim he took a knife and in the middle of the night broke into 10 different houses and killed 10 people single-handedly. Now then Miles Sanderson conveniently dies the next day in RCMP custody after killing the only other eyewitness, apparently. So these guys, it was an obvious kind of staged killing. And sure enough, Wally Burns backs off and the diamond mining goes ahead. But then guess who shows up? The Prime Minister of Canada, Mary Simon, the Governor General, Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, who's already indicted for covering up residential school mass murder. They all show up and do this song and dance. Oh, it's horrible. Here's $62.5 million, the shush money to the local band council to allow the $2 billion diamond mining to go ahead. Meanwhile, the coroner is a former Saskatoon police chief who covered up the murder of Native people when they were taken out in the middle of the night and a dump. It's called a Starlight Tour, where you take a Native person in the middle of the prairies in the winter and just dump them there without their shoes. They're dead. And he was convicted, this Clive Weekhill. Well, there he is. He's the coroner conducting the investigation into the murder of these 10 Crees. So this happened this fall. And that's the regular way it is in Canada. And because Canada and Australia, they're right on the front line of what China needs. Geopolitically, it's their back door into America. Australia, because of all the resources and kind of the geography. So Australia and Canadian Indigenous people are targeted this way constantly, as are anybody like us who tries to take it on. Those are kind of the front lines of the Chinese expansion right now.
So next question from a viewer is, how much does Trudeau know? Is he just a foot soldier at the low level?
No, he's very implicated. Who's trained that way? He's a classical Manchurian candidate politician. I know this because friends of mine worked in a place called the Hollywood Hospital, where all three of the Trudeau children were brought. It's in New Westminster in the suburbs of Vancouver. His mother, Margaret Sinclair, was there as a child getting electric shock treatment and all this stuff. Then Justin ends up there with his brothers. And so, you know, that scenario, like there's all this evidence about it. We've even interviewed the nurses who used to, you know, see the kids being brought in routinely. But his personal role in this is blatant. His first act when he was elected prime minister was to bring in what's called the Foreign Investment Protection Act, which allows China to not only buy up the whole country, removes all limits on Chinese investment, but they can even station their troops on Canadian soil to protect their businesses. Hello, isn't that an act of treason? But no, I mean, it's very blatant all the time. And I don't know if you remember this big truckers convoy, the big protest to kind of shut down Canada for a while because there's this one highway that links east and west. They shut it all down. Trudeau takes off for the West Coast. He vanishes. They show up in Ottawa. And Trudeau vanishes off to the West Coast, obviously to check in with his Chinese handlers, right? But then he comes back and he invokes for the first time in Canadian history, the Emergency Powers Act to shut down anybody who's involved in this convoy. They lock up the truck convoy leaders for months without charges, everything. It's this typical thing. So yeah, he's China's boy, big time, right?
You know, you previously brought us up to speed on the disappearance of the kids and the role of the Queen and Prince Philip in that. That was some of the very early stuff that we did that went viral on YouTube that they banned us from having there. But earlier on in this conversation, you mentioned the role of King Charles. I didn't know about what's his involvement?
Oh, Charlie boy. Well, you know, he has this appearance of somebody who's kind of stupid and innocent. But in fact, we all know about his association with Jimmy Savile and some of that blatant stuff, right? But if you recall, on October 10th, 1964, 10 children were abducted by Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip out of the Kamloops residential school, this Catholic-run school, and they vanished. The one eyewitness, William Coombs, is killed in St. Paul's Hospital by arsenic poisoning, according to the nurse, Chloe Kirka, who examined him, right? But it turns out that not all of those children were killed. Two of them were taken back to Carnarvon Castle and ritually killed there as part of the Nine Circle ceremonies, October 30th, 1964, at Samhain. Charles was present. We also understand from sources in the police that when William Coombs was killed, it came as a direct result of an order from Westminster. There was a kill order out on William Coombs because he was the one eyewitness to see this. So, you know, his Charles's implication in this, you know, is, again, as a shareholder in Rio Tinto, he was undoubtedly connected to that massacre of the Cree Indians in Saskatchewan recently. So, I mean, it just goes with the job. You know, I mean, but he's already been, he had papers served on him, you know, that there's a, in England, there's a group of people in, you know, investigating this. But I mean, it's the same old dilemma. When the killers are in charge, people feel there's just so much you can do, right? You certainly can't do it in their system, but you got to create these other pressures, like not only our direct actions, but our common law courts, the things that forced Ratzinger out of office in 2013, right?
Do you know anything about Camilla and her role in any of this?
No, not personally, and not things I've seen. But I mean, just, you know, I wouldn't put anything past any of these people that were in the world they operate in, right?
So, with Pope Benedict's death, then, is there a power struggle in the Vatican?
I think there's less of one now because, like I said, the traditionalists are on the decline. One of the things that Bergoglio, Pope Francis, did, and people were scratching their head over this, saying, as he was on the plane back from Canada in the summer after signing that deal to finance the Chinese takeover of the resources and infrastructure all over North America, he makes this kind of offhand comment to reporters, oh, yes, it was genocide. And so, you know, what that does is, what do you do when you could be threatened with lawsuits? Well, you bring in all your assets and you hide them. And so right after he got back to Rome, he announced that he was going to centralize all money in the Vatican Bank. He's calling in all loans. He's shutting down societies like the Knights of Columbus and Opus Dei, who have a lot of money. He's saying, okay, that's all in the Vatican Bank now. Because, of course, China's saying, hey, wait a minute, we want our $1 trillion guaranteed now. So it was almost a provocation to give him the justification to take all the money, gather it all in, and ensure his buddies in Beijing that it's coming through to them. So all of these things are calculated. And so, yeah, he wouldn't have been able to do that if there was a major power struggle going on. I think the Ratzinger wing are on the decline. Bergoglio is probably going to step down soon because there's too much shit on him. And it's like what happened to Ratzinger. You've got to get rid of the guy with too much on him and then bring in the new smiley face. It could be an African. If I were them, I'd do something politically correct, like have an African on the throne now. But more likely, it could be, like I say, this Cardinal John Tong, there's two cardinals in China. One is a dissident, Joseph Zen, and he's criticizing the human rights record of China and all that. But this John Tong is part of the state church, the state Catholic Church, the official church that the Vatican endorses. And if there's going to be anybody who could be pope politically, that would probably be smartest to have a Chinese pope in now to smooth the whole, you know, process we're talking about.
Some of the viewers are wondering, what is Opus Dei?
It means in Latin, the work of God. And but every time they say God, you should read it as Satan. But it's an several centuries old secret society, kind of an ultra conservative faction, you know, in the Catholic Church. They are very linked to dictatorships all over the world. Opus Dei, when they're like in Argentina, when they were murdering people en masse, Opus Dei was one of the advisors to the government and Archbishop Bergoglio. And so it's got his hands in a lot of pies. They were involved in the murder of John Paul I. They're very much behind what's called the Holy Alliance, which is the Vatican Assassination and Espionage Bureau. They were set up in the 1500s to kill Queen Elizabeth I. You know, that was her their claim to infamy. But you know, they've been killing people all down the centuries. You know, this thing. So yeah, they're right in there with all the dirt, right?
So how does this prolonged war in Ukraine fit into all of this?
Well, think if you're the Chinese and you're an expert in the art of war, what do you want to do? There's Russia. It's like Orwell predicted. You got Oceania, Eurasia, East Asia, the three power blocks. And you get Oceania and Eurasia to fight each other. So, you know, this whole thing, the funding the political parties in America, the Democrats and the Republicans, to destroy each other. This internecine civil war in America between blue and red parties are distracting, keeping America focused and weak and divided and occupied. They just sent $44 billion to the Ukrainians to keep that Russia and America occupied. Well, China picks up the marbles. So, I mean, and the Vatican. So it's classic Sun Tzu. I mean, and, you know, it's someone once joked that the Americans lost in Vietnam because they were reading von Clausewitz and the Vietnamese were reading Sun Tzu about how you outmaneuver a bigger opponent. You get the opponent to fight each other and destroy itself rather than fight it directly. So, yeah, people say, are the Chinese going to occupy North America, the People's Liberation Army? And no, they don't have to. They own the debt in America, half the debt now. They own more and more of the economy and the infrastructure, you know, transportation, the whole bit. So it's that kind of behind-the-scenes takeover that's going on, right?
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
So who owns the military-industrial complex that's profiting from all this war?
Well, it's kind of, it's not so much about the countries anymore, because countries are like a vestigial organ. They're about to fall off. They're just the appearance for to keep the masses divided, like religion, right? If there's power groups within the corporatocracy, right? And a lot of it now is channeled through through China. And did you know that two-thirds of all of the economic growth in the world happens in the Indo-Pacific region?
Wow.
Like the Pacific, India, the Middle East, Southeast Asia, the Philippines, China. That's where it's all happening. You know, so I mean, look there for the money. Follow the money always, and it'll take you there, which is Chinese sphere of influence. There, a lot of the, you know, I mentioned the $1 trillion that the Vatican is underwriting them every year. A lot of that goes into what you can look it up. It's called the Road and Belt Initiative. China's buying up the road systems and railways and ports all over the world, and they're channeling all of it into Asia, just like the British did, you know, just like the Americans did. Now it's China's turn. And, you know, so, I mean, that's kind of the general picture, right?
The Rebecca is asking about the Vatican's investments in the military-industrial complex.
Huge. Oh, it's huge. They own the biggest small arms company in the world, Beretta Limited. A lot of them, like the Anglican Church in England, big investors in the landmine industry. They are major shareholders in Big Pharma, over $9.5 billion in Pfizer alone. But look it up. I mean, here's the thing, though. It's hard to do research because the Vatican Bank is a secret closed society. You can never find out what they're doing. But you can hear echoes of it. Like in America, it's the only country in the world where the church has to disclose a certain amount of its financial dealings. And you get glimpses of this, you know, in some of the American and in The Economist, and that they'll make an occasional reference to this, but it's really hard to track down unless you know people on the inside. And, you know, if you create enough pressure and awareness, those people start coming out with that information. Right?
So you talk about these Orwellian three big powers. Will that spread to Taiwan?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, it's history. I mean, it's that China's engulfing the whole region. So, I mean, it's where America was after World War II. Britain's going down. America was going up. Now America's going down. China's going up. In another 50 years, you'll see the world economy pretty much owned by China, militarily as well. So, I mean, it's the one of the frightening things about that is, within the Eastern world, there's no tradition at all of common law, of the idea that people have the right to be critical of power, that, you know, that you can find the truth through question and answer, the Socratic method. No, the Confucian system of thought and education is you have the teacher, they tell you the truth, you regurgitate it, everybody's in line with the emperor. And so as that ideology spreads all over the world, you're going to see it's a perfect medium for the corporatocracy, because that's what the Vatican and the corporations want. That's what's behind the whole COVID microchipping program, is to make everybody components of that big machine, literally. And so that's why people have to bury their differences, especially in America. They got to forget about these contrived differences and find a new basis of unity to resist this bigger enemy that's facing all of us now, right?
She said China's absorbing the whole region. Does that mean that there could be a proxy war in Taiwan then against the, you know, with these three big Orwellian players?
Well, you know, you notice the Americans have talked, made noises about, they've done maneuvers in the South China Sea and everything, but they always back off. You see, America's too divided. Like, they're already engaged in back in the Ukrainians. They're not going to get involved in a shooting war in Asia. They're just spread too thin. And their debt is enormous. And like I say, all the Chinese have to do is call in the debt and the American economy goes bloop. So they've got them by the knackers, and Beijing has Washington, you know, where they want.
See, there's these reports about the neo-Nazis in Ukraine. What are your thoughts on them?
Oh, well, the Ukraine has a long tradition of that, you know, not just hating Jews, but like in World War II, the Ukrainian SS were the more notorious of the SS groups, right? Something conveniently swabbed out of the group memory now. I remember in Canada after World War II, more Nazis were brought in than any country in the world. And they even shipped in an entire Ukrainian SS division. You know, a lot of these people went to work in the MKUltra program and the Indian hospitals. I remember a Native woman I spoke to who was sterilized. She looked at the doctor's arm, and right there, well, there was that SS tattoo. Lots of, we documented in the Indian hospitals, these guys doing pain threshold experiments where you torture children to death, like what they were doing in Auschwitz, Treblinka. But again, you know, it's like, that's a long tradition in Ukraine, and it's just history playing itself out again, right?
Do you think Princess Diana publicly speaking out about the landmine industry played a role in her death?
Very likely. I mean, because again, it's always a question of, are you, how big are the toes you're stepping on? And do they have to set an example, right? Like, people were saying, well, they'd never kill Martin Luther King. He's too well known. Well, of course they will if they want to set an example, or like her. That's all probable. Then, quite possible. But the question then is, don't let it scare you, because that's the purpose of a killing in plain sight, is to get everybody frightened and running away.
What can you tell us about the recent massacre of Cree Indians in Canada?
Well, I mentioned it earlier in the show. It was at the behest of, we believe, the royal family, who are major shareholders in Rio Tinto, with the open collusion of, like, why would the Governor General, the Prime Minister, and the head of the Anglican Church all fly out to this little Cree reservation? And Trudeau hands them $62.5 million after the main chief, who was opposing the Rio Tinto, six of his relatives are killed in the middle of the night. I mean, it's a clear warning to people. And this happens routinely in the Native world. Every few months, something will happen, like a Mountie will come to the door and just shoot a Native woman through the heart, right? A killing. And then he'll say, oh, she was holding a knife, and he won't even be reprimanded, right? I mean, they routinely do this at a targeted population to get everybody terrified. Like, why they grab Native children and traffic them all the time. Keeps everybody cowed, and they don't challenge the chief when they're signing away the land and the resources to China, right? It's just state terrorism and church terrorism, and it works routinely, right?
You got a question from a guest. What do you think will happen to Ghislaine Maxwell after the 23rd of January deadline? That's from Matthew Steeples.
I don't know. You'll have to tell me. I'm not up to date on that issue at all.
I've written books about it, but I don't know what the 23rd of January deadline is, Matthew. On another note, that we're talking about deadlines, it's triggered something at me. So we recently had a podcast guest. He flew over from America. I won't say his name. And he ended up doing 40 years in California prison for murder. And he talked about this priest in LA when he was a kid that would offer the kids sneakers to fellate them. And all the kids, you know, they didn't properly understand the insidious nature of what was happening at the time because they were so young. Anyway, this priest, there's massive settlements being made now pertaining to these cases. But the guy flew over, he said that there's like a deadline now whereby you have to sue the church by this point. I think it was the end of last year. And then you can no longer sue them anymore for these pedophile cases. Is that the case?
Oh, that's the norm. Statute of limitations are continually lowered. Like normally, there's no statute of limitation on murder. If you killed somebody 50 years ago, you can still be tried for it and your accomplices. But when the shit began to come out about all of these mass murders and trafficking and institutionalized rape of children, the church steps in and through their political flunkies, pass legislation that says, oh no, you have to have done it by a certain date. You only have 3 months to report it. All these restrictions, that's how about 90% of the survivors of the residential schools were excluded from legal action. Just arbitrary things to help the killers get away with it. So it's totally unlawful, but you know, money talks, the rest walk. I mean, you know, that with trillions of dollars at their disposal, the Vatican can pretty much do anything they want. So it's the same old game, right?
So you seem to be in good health and spirits, Kevin. Previously, you seemed a bit shook up because there's been attempts on your life and stuff like that. Has that died down now?
It goes in waves. You know, it's always... at this stage, you don't want to create martyrs. By and large, they don't want to create martyrs because then people say, hey, wait a minute, maybe he was onto something, right? I've had to be a lot more careful in the way I operate. I normally aren't. But don't forget, like somebody like me, they did everything short of killing me. And it's not good to kill somebody. You've got to create a fear around them and a discrediting, which is far more effective than murdering somebody. And that worked very well for many years in Canada. People were literally afraid to even mention my name or to talk about this stuff. And the shadow now is equal. You know, you rent a hall and it's shut down. You invite people, they start funding you, then they're shut down. I mean, it's like automatic now, right? But that doesn't ever stop the change from happening and the impact, you know, of getting that out there all the time. So you just keep at it. I mean, you know, we're all going to die. The question is, how do you want to die? Do you want to die fighting to the end? Or do you want to crawl away and get a few more moments of slave life? I mean, that's not, you know, forget it.
So how are your campaigns in Canada and around the world going right now?
Well, you know, it's backward and forward all the time. Like there's people setting up on the model of our republic in Canada. People now in 9 countries, we have regular Zoom calls. They're trying the same thing all over Europe and Australia and South America. They're taking the side that people can govern themselves. They can set up our own courts or our own assemblies, pass our own laws, like the one we did in Canada in 2020 that nullified all COVID measures. And I tell you, when I show my citizenship card to cops, they always back off. I say, look, I'm not under Crown jurisdiction. You know, we've nullified Crown authority. Perfectly within our right to do that. Our local assembly passed a law and I'm bound by that law. You got to think outside and act outside their system, and then it starts crumbling because we it's like a balloon. Once you start taking your energy out of it, it just deflates. So, you know, we don't fight them. We say to the cops, come over to us, take an oath, nullify your oath to the crown and take it to the people and their constitution and our republic. And we find that's happening in small ways, but like anything real, it's happening from the grassroots. And so that's been really successful. The repression happens as a result in response, especially in the West Coast. Every time we try to build an assembly, republic assembly in the West Coast, it gets taken out quick because China does not want interference in British Columbia and Alberta, where their main thrust is right now to grab a lot of the resources. But I mean, in February, we're doing all sorts of things because it's February 9th is the 25th anniversary of us beginning the campaign about genocide in residential schools. February 26th is the anniversary of the murder of William Coombs in St. Paul's Hospital. So last year, we took a coffin with William's name on it, walked all over downtown Vancouver, stopped traffic, went into the hospital with a bullhorn and talked about how you're murdering people in this hospital. It was great. Cops didn't know what to do. So when you put it in their face like that, like on churches on Sunday morning, they don't know what to do because you've gotten in behind their flank. And so we always have to think of ways of doing that. So having great fun doing it, right? It's the best way to spend my 67th birthday on February 10th.
So what's your next book going to be about, Kevin?
I just wrote it. It's called A Tale of Two Brothers. It's a semi-fictionalized account of my brother Bill and I, because we're kind of like opposite, very opposite. He's this retired, get this, he's a retired big pharma CEO who's like always been disdainful of me in that. And it's a story about our life together and but how we represent these two kind of strains in Canada. You know, and his whole history of, he was involved in a water company. He helped bring China into the province 20 years ago, buying off politicians and secret deals, you know, to get exclusive rights to export bulk water. I talk about that in the book, fairly not so veiled reference to the real company and him. So I thought, you know, within every family, you know, you got to at some point face your dirty laundry. And I figured, why not, right?
So is he completely open with you then about the corruption that he's helped implement?
It's funny because it's like in the church, when they think they've got you, they admit everything because they figure, what's this guy going to do with it? You know, what can he do to stop us? They think they're God. So Bill used to disclose this stuff on my late mother, who was involved in it too. They talked about the inside deals going on. The Prime Minister Mulroney, Prime Minister or Premier Van Der Zem in British Columbia all had shares in Western Canada Water. They gave him exclusivity rights in return. There was the mafia, the Di Bartolo family that bought into the company. And the woman who testified that she took $10,000 in a brown paper bag to the environment minister on behalf of the company, she dies the next day or the next week and can't testify in court. And all the judges, it's like the killing of the Pope in 78, all the judges start dying. So water war crimes, look it up. It's a water wars crimes. It's a website that documents some of this, but I thought, hell, now's the time to write a family account of this shit. Right?
We've only got a few minutes left. If people are watching, get your questions in now. This is your last chance to get your questions in. So we started this broadcast today, Kevin, 4 hours ago, talking about Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum. Have you got thoughts on them?
No, I mean, I wish I knew more about, like, I don't spend a lot of time looking at the official institutions and that. I'm too busy on the ground working with people, but the general picture is as I've described, the ascendancy of China, and the subordination of a lot of other interests to that geopolitical kind of power in the world. So I think that that's what people have to keep their eyes on. It's like, I like to quote Napoleon. He said, in battle, a bad general sees too many things. I always keep my eyes on the main body of the enemy. So you have to ask, who is the main enemy? Don't let go of your attention on that, right?
So because of the joint communist history, do you think China and Russia would team up against America?
It's not about ideology. There's no such thing as communism, capitalism. It's all fluff. Russia is doing China's job right now by fighting in Ukraine. And maybe there'll be a payoff. Maybe he wants Putin to come down. Maybe it would help China. Who knows, really? It's flexible. But, you know, they hold the marbles, by and large. And if America was smart, they'd line up with Russia against China, right? But, I mean, again, they're too factionalized and divided in their own country to bring the will to bear to do that. But
so Rebecca wants to know, do Kevin's books list sources, as I would really like to start researching these subjects?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the best in general, murderbydecree.com. It's up online. All of my books you can see there. And go to Amazon, put my name in, Kevin Annett, and you'll see all of them, including the recent one, Tale of Two Brothers. But you can also write to me, angelfire101@protonmail.com. And I can connect you to a lot of sources, not just internet, but even more real about this stuff.
Jake wants to know whether China is facing a crisis in population.
I'm not sure. I don't think it's about numbers ever. It's about, you know, the economy and how much dissent there is within China, how controllable it is. I mean, all of that, right?
What are your hopes for 2023?
Well, the hopes of all of us to have a world free. I think we're in a civil war between free humanity and the corporatocracy. And I hope people get together and overthrow the bastards. you know, I just want to say in closing, this is a special year for me because it's 50 years since I was first condemned in the public media. When I was 17 years old, I helped organize a union among high school students and a bill of rights for young people. And I was denounced, me and my two friends who headed this union, we were denounced in the columns of the Vancouver Sun and Providence newspapers as anarchists who wanted to bring down the school. I had death threats. There were Mounties coming to our door. I said, this is a precursor to the way my life turned out. But I thought, hell, one thing I learned out of that, Sean, is that the powers that be are mostly smoke and mirrors. They like to scare you, but when push comes to shove, they don't have a hell of a lot of power except what we give them. So I'd like to remember, honor this year, 50 years still at it. Thank you.
Just remind the people where they can find you online and stuff.
Murderbydecree.com, Republic of Kanata, K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofkanata.org, angelfire101 at protonmail.com is that. And then Sundays we do our blog show at, I believe it's 11 p.m. Greenwich time, 6 p.m. Eastern time, at bbsradio.com/herewestand.
Thank you, Kevin. You're always on fire. We salute your great work. You have a great rest of your day over there. Cheers.
You too, brother. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, brother. Thank you.
All right.
What a fantastic guest, Kevin. He just never disappoints, does he?
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right Rug.